now have words by Ella Renee Bosar. The small plot of ground on which you were born cannot be expected to stay forever the same. Earth changes, and your home becomes different places. You took flesh from clay, but the clay did not come from just one place. To feel alive, important, and safe, know your own waters and hills, but no more. You have stars in your bones and oceans in blood. You have opposing terrain in each eye. You belong to the land and sky of your first cry. You belong to infinity. Now, we announced this service today as a celebration, I think, from global to local, but we've ended up pretty much focusing on local. There's a lot of local stuff. So we had local pictures that were all pretty much within an hour or so of Halifax. And Alan now has a quiz for you, which I think is about physical things.
Okay, so we're celebrating Earth Day in this Sunday. And the first Earth Day was 1970. But it was only held in the United States. It took another 10 years for Canada to hold an Earth Day. So in 1970, I was just finishing my dissertation at UBC in physical oceanography. And at that stage, that time, I was in a institute which was really focused on how the ocean and the atmosphere interact. So we were at the forefront of a program called the Global Atmospheric Research Program, whose goal was to do long-range weather forecasting. They hoped to get weather forecasts that had some meaning past 3 days. That was the state of the science. On the other hand, the people organizing Earth Day were way ahead of us. So, Dennis Hayes, the chief organizer of the first Earth Day, wrote, "It's already too late to avoid mass starvation." Senator Gaylord Nelson, the founder of Earth Day, stated, "Somewhere in 25 years, somewhere between 75 and 80% of all species of living animals will be extinct." Peter Gunter, professor at Northern Texas State University, stated, "By 1995, widespread famines will begin in India, and these will spread by 1990 to include all of India, Pakistan, China, and the Near East." Paul Ehrlich, the author of The Population Bomb, predicted that between 1980 and 1989, 4 billion people, including 65 million Americans, would starve to death. So that was the first Earth Day. That was the feeling in the popular press. It wasn't the feeling in the scientific literature. Scientific literature was trying to figure out whether or not we thought the change in rainfall was going to make the climate get cooler, or CO2 was going to make it warmer, because in fact for the previous 2 decades the climate had been pretty stable. So now we're in 2016, and I thought I'd do a quiz to see how much you people understand or think the climate and the environment has changed. So, first quiz question. How much has the Earth warmed since 1970? So I have 3 choices. A half a degree, 0.7 of a degree, or 0.9 of a degree. Should I have a show of hands for a half a degree? Higher? I got 1, 0.7, 0.9. So you guys do know your temperature. So what's the global population this year, 2016? Is it 7.4 billion? 8 billion? 8.7 billion. So let's go with that again. 7.4? Yeah, look, a little less than half of you. 8 billion? Yeah, 8.7 billion. I think all of you, each of those is equal. The estimate is 7.4 billion at the moment. What was the population in 1970? Was it 3 billion? 3.5 billion or 4 billion? So let's try that again. 3 billion? Try it. 1 or 2. 3.5 billion? Yeah, that's a majority. 4 billion. Okay, it was 3.5 billion. So it means that the population from 1970 to now, the global population has doubled plus a little bit. So in 1970, they were predicting large-scale starvation. So what is the how has the global rice production changed since 1970? You think it's increased by 205%, so just over double, or 225%, which is quite a bit over double, or 250%. So let's try that again. Just 205% increase in rice. 225%. 250%. It's actually the lowest of those numbers. It's 205. So rice production has kept up with population, but it hasn't done spectacular gains. That may be because most of the rice is eaten by poor people, and poor people haven't had the economic gain to be able to afford the rice. One thing that has changed over that period is the amount of rice traded internationally has gone from 1 or 2% of the total production to 10% of total production. So rice has become an international commodity. So wheat production has had a 235% increase in that time, and soybeans have had a 635% increase. So we've really done well in soybeans. So what's been going down to local, what's been the increase in the population over the same period of Nova Scotia? Have we had 100,000 more people, 130,000 more people, or 160,000 more people? So let's try that again. 100? Okay, 130? 160. Okay, it's 130 between the census of 71 and 2011. So we've spent a lot of money and we put sewage treatment in our harbor. So the most polluted part of our harbor when we were just dumping sewage in was the inner harbor, which is between the bridges. So following the completion is the fecal coliform concentration in the inner harbor greater than the swimming standard, which is 200 colonies per 100 milliliters. So is it safe to swim in the inner harbor now, or is it not safe to swim according to sort of the public health standards? How many think it's safe to swim? How many think it's not safe to swim?
It's minimum safety standard,
right? Yeah, it is a minimum safety standard. It actually is safe. It's well below that level. We're not sure whether or not. Well, there's oil, but this is fecal coliform. This is.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, what percentage of Nova Scotia land area is now protected? Is it 8.3%? 10.3% or 12.3%?
Protected.
So let's try it again. Protected. Protected means it's either park or wilderness protection area or nature conservatory area. There's a whole bunch of different protected, but essentially it means that there's limited human use of that other than recreation. So, let's try it. Do you think 8.3% of Nova Scotia is protected? No. Go to the third. 10.3? 12.3. 12.3 is the answer. It was achieved in December of last year when they announced a few more. The target is, in fact, 13. But in 1970, the protected land was only 7%. Okay. So we're doing fairly good. Not perfect.
Now you may wonder why I thought we need to bring in the political. But talked around the situation in Halifax, I thought that you might like to hear about a couple of things. As Universalist Unitarians, we recognize and respect the interdependent web of all existence, which it said here right at the beginning of the service, but it fell out. It is all very well for us to say this, but we all know that in many aspects of our lives, there does not seem to be an awareness of how everything is linked. We know, for example, that the health of people is inextricably connected to the health of the air, soil, and water on which they depend, and for which their governments, to a greater or lesser degree, are responsible. This is where the political part comes in. Around the world, there are actually 110 countries that recognize the right of their citizens to live in a healthy environment. Our Canadian government does not. In Canada, there's been, for the last couple of years, a movement called the Blue Dot Campaign, which a number of you may have heard of already. It's started to ensure that such environmental rights are also recognized here. It was started by the David Suzuki Foundation, working with EcoJustice, which is a Canadian nonprofit environmental law organization. The plan for the campaign is to work from the ground up, to get support from individuals, with their support, take the concept of environmental rights to their municipal governments, with the support of the municipalities, get environmental rights approved at the provincial level, and then move to have it adopted by the federal level. An amendment to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms is the ultimate goal. You may have heard something of that. You may not realize that at the 2015 AGM, last May, at the CUC, an action entitled Right to Clean Air, Water, and Soil was approved, as an addition to the previously approved CUC 2009 Environmental Resolution. I think they actually wanted to bring another resolution, but it was said, well, we already have an environmental resolution, so this is an extra action added on to that original 2009 piece. That's a bit wordy, this bit, but just hang in there. The exact words are as follows. The CUC urged member congregations and fellowships and their members to engage, join with, and support others in their community in collective or cooperative political activity to persuade first municipal and subsequently provincial and then the federal government to recognize a clean environment as a basic right and to enact within their jurisdictions resolutions, bylaws, and/or legislation as appropriate to protect the rights for all to clean air, water, and soil, along with the right to know what pollutants are being released. Did any of you know that the CUC actually passed that last May? I meant to do a service about this in the fall. Oh, good, Devin did. He was there too. But I got caught up with other things in the fall, so it didn't happen. But you can relax as far as HRM is concerned. Sort of. you use don't have to do anything to get Halifax on site. Almost 4 months before that was brought to the CUC, the local Blue Dot campaign had already made a presentation on the right to a healthy environment to the Environment and Sustainability Standing Committee. The committee was very interested, and the request to support environmental rights worked its way through the municipal system until it came to council on October 20th. It was the day after the election, so I wasn't really paying attention. City staff were concerned about potential future legal commitments and financial implications, that's their job, as were some of the councillors when it did reach council. However, at that point, it was described as a declaration of council with no action flowing from it and thus no financial implications. Strictly a political statement with respect to its intention on a healthy environment. So on October 20th, moved by Councillor Watts, seconded by Councillor Karsten, that the Halifax Regional Council make a declaration of the right to a healthy environment as per Attachment 1 of the report dated October 5th, and it was passed unanimously. So we citizens of Halifax Regional Municipality now have the right to a healthy environment as per Attachment 1, which I'm not going to read you. We're listed on the Blue Dot website as being one of many municipalities that support the Blue Dot campaign. However, it's interesting to note that HRM has had many of the other municipalities altered a few key words in that declaration and left out a significant point. So the whole thing is like this, right? So you don't want to hear that. But there are words in the original that shall apply the precautionary principle, that is, where threats of serious or irreversible damage to human health or the environment exist, they shall take cost-effective measures. So this got changed to, they shall consider the precautionary principle, and they shall evaluate cost-effective measures to prevent the degradation of the environment and to protect the health of the citizens. But lack of full scientific certainty shall not be viewed as sufficient reason for HRM to postpone such measures. So I thought that's a good line. It also says that instead of saying they shall apply full cost accounting methodologies, which means when you're evaluating reasonably foreseeable costs, you consider the costs to human health and the environment. Instead, they're going to assess full cost accounting instead of applying it. And there's also a whole section left out about specifying objectives, targets, and timelines and actions within the jurisdiction. They're just going to consider residents' rights to a healthy environment. And also, they're not going to review the targets and objectives and timelines. They're just going to consider setting them. And they will review it formally every 5 years, but they're not going to evaluate it at that point. Just review it. And they left out the line totally. Perhaps I haven't got it here. This is also from the city of Port Coquitlam, which was a guideline that they used. Because there's a number of them that did it. They both left out the commitment, which the Blue Dot campaign people had really wanted in there, that they would take this to the provincial level and then onwards to the federal. The legal advisors really got nervous about saying how they're going to tackle the provincial or take anything to the federal level. And then, at the end of it, many of these municipalities did add a line that they want the Blue Dot campaign to make available the full text of their resolutions that they had passed at their councils. However, that's not on the Blue Dot campaign site. They just say that all these cities support the Blue Dot campaign. So there may still be a little work for you use to do if we really want to work to get our municipal level to have effective environmental rights legislation. If you go on the website for the city, or I can send you the links, you can see all the details of the Environmental and Sustainability Committee discussion, and you can see the actual discussion at council, which was very interesting, which councillors were for and which had concerns, but they all supported it in the end. And the arguments from the Jennifer Watts as the head of the Environmental and Sustainability Committee. So I just thought it would be interesting to bring in the political side of our respect for you.
So you're going to email that, are you?
I can email that out, Norm, if you like. Okay. Or if you contact the city clerk, she'll send it to you. Or if you can find it, it is on the website. But it's not always easy to find directly. So, want to feel healthier, happier, and more peaceful? Add a daily dose of nature to your routine. Most of us spend too much time in front of screens and too little time outdoors. So this May, the David Suzuki Foundation is challenging you to join the 30-30 challenge by spending 30 minutes a day in nature for 30 days. The goal is simple: to reconnect us with nature for the sake of our health and mental well-being. A growing chorus of scientists and researchers agree time spent in nature makes us happier, healthier, and less stressed. It increases creativity and lowers risk of heart attacks. It even makes us nicer, more empathetic humans with more meaningful relationships and increased community involvement. Evidence shows that being regularly immersed in a natural setting, like a park, wetland, or woodlot, reduces blood pressure, anxiety, and stress levels, and boosts immunity. Simply having a view of nature leads to faster patient recovery times in hospitals and higher job satisfaction and increased concentration in office workers. Outdoor exercise increases energy levels and reduces anger, depression, and obesity. For children, studies show that time outdoors, especially unstructured time in more natural settings, can increase curiosity, creativity, and problem-solving ability. It also improves their physical fitness and coordination and reduces symptoms associated with attention deficit disorder. It can even reduce the likelihood of needing glasses for nearsightedness. Studies also demonstrate that nature can have profound effects on entire neighborhoods or communities by improving job and life satisfaction of residents and aiding community cohesion and identity. It can even reduce violence and bridge the gap in health between high and low-income communities. Given this amazing array of benefits and our increasing urbanization and isolation from nature, it's essential that we reframe our traditional view of nature as a place for leisure and sport towards one that emphasizes a full range of physical, mental, and social health benefits. So, let's start the 30-30 challenge today. When you love nature, nature loves you back.